Holding on, I'm Gimel Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. We mentioned in the Mishnah a bunch of things that you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov involving fire. One of them is the Mishnah had said that in Malabne and Asar Ofim, you're not allowed to heat tiles, meaning like we're talking like roof tiles or bricks or something like that. Shingles maybe is another possible translation, whatever. You're not allowed, they're made out of clay, out of earthenware. You're not allowed to heat them up white hot in order to roast on them. So the question that one asks is, my colleague, what's wrong with that? You're allowed to cook and bake on Yom Tov. Why shouldn't you be able to heat up the tiles for that purpose, to bake or cook on them? Because here we're talking about new tiles. And the problem is, you have to check them whether they're going to be able to take such intense heat without breaking. So therefore, so on Yom Tov, you can't do that because if they do break, then it comes out. You did the tircha of heating them up for nothing. The Amri Lom, a different version is that the problem is not that you need to check them to see whether they're going to be able to withstand that heat, but rather because the actual heating them up itself strengthens them. It makes it the first time you heat them up, that strengthens them, that closes up the little pores in them and whatever. So even if it is for Tzorach Yom Tov, but you're also making a keli with it, therefore you're back to the problem of making a keli on Yom Tov. And therefore that would be why it's also. So now the Gemara is going to bring a few different dinim that relate back to this matter of libun ra'ofim. Now that we established that there are two possible things, one is that you're trying them out, and therefore it may or may not work, and you may end up having done malacha on Yom Tov without a purpose, or that the problem is that you're actually completing the keli on Yom Tov, and after all, this is the kind of machshira echel nefesh that you could have done before Yom Tov. There's no reason you have to be firing them up dafka on Yom Tov in order to which helps strengthen them. You could have done that on erev Yom Tov. So now the Gemara is going to bring a few different dinim that are going to relate back to this. First one, a Mishnah tells us in Chulin, Tnanahos, and we learn in a Mishnah in Chulin. Now we know like this, there are eight basic categories of treifas. Altogether, once you get into all the details, then you have the Mishnah there in Chulin lists 18, and the Rambam expands them to 70 because you have, it depends how finely you count them, which things you count as all subsets of one thing, and which things you count as separate treifas, separate conditions, but they all fall under one of eight major headings. One of those headings is called Nefula, where an animal falls off a wall or falls into a deep pit or whatever, falls from a height. There's a concern of something called, now you have two possible problems if an animal or bird, as we're going to talk about, falls off something like that. One problem is regular treifas. Its spinal cord may get broken, a lot of its ribs may get broken, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the regular kinds of treifas. So then, okay, you have the usual rules of, then you have the usual rules of treifas with that. You can check and you can see whether it has any of those problems. Then you have something special to this din of Nefula called Risuk Evarim, which means that internal organs may have gotten crushed in the fall. So in other words, you would look at those organs, you wouldn't notice any difference from the way they normally look. But nevertheless, they've been concussed, I guess you could say, sort of like when a person has a concussion in their head. So here you have these evarim, these internal organs may have gotten concussed in a way where even though they still look perfectly fine on the outside, really internally they're all jumbled up, and therefore the animal is going to die. So therefore, the Mishnah says, so the Mishnah gives some examples. Drossa, besides the obvious examples, if an animal falls off a roof, you have an example. Drossa, if a person stepped on a bird, so now you have a problem of that has the same effect. It could cause risuk evarim. Osha tofa bakoso, or he banged a bird against the wall, same problem. Osha tzat the behema, or if an animal crushed it. In all those cases, umafakeses, if now the bird is moving around convulsively, it can't stand up. The shasam esles, if it survived for 24 hours, the shachta, and then you shechted it, ksheira. then it's kosher, because if it had risuk evarim, it wouldn't survive more than 24 hours. So the fact that it did, even though it can't stand up, shows that it didn't suffer from risuk evarim. The fact that it doesn't stand up may be something else. It may have broken a bone. It may have sprained something or whatever. But that wouldn't be enough to make it tereva. However, amar abalaz bar yanim b'shumar abalaz bar antignus tzricha b'dika. Now you do also need to check it, even if it survived for 24 hours. Fine, that takes care of the problem of risuk evarim. But you also have the problem that you might have other, the more regular kind of tereifas. Again, you might have, for example, ribs or the spinal cord or whatever snapped. So you have to check it for those. Because the other kinds of tereifas, an animal or a bird can live with other kinds of tereifas as much as 12 months. So therefore, so you're still going to, so even after the animal or the bird survived 24 hours after the fall or after being stepped on or what have you, you also need bedikah. So now to relate this to the halachas of Yom Tov, boy minei Reb Yumi min Reb Zera, ma'ol ha-shecht to be Yom Tov. Are you allowed to shecht this bird on Yom Tov? So in other words, it's already 24 hours. So again, you don't have the problem of risuk evarim. If you shechted it within 24 hours, for sure you can't, because there's no way to tell. It might have risuk evarim. But once the 24 hours have passed, would you be allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov and then afterward do the bedikah? Mi machzikin in reyos of Yom Tov oloi. Do we assume that on Yom Tov, do we have to be concerned on Yom Tov that there might be a reyos, there might be something wrong with it? And then it comes out, you shechted it, and then you're going to do the bedikah, and it turns out, sure enough, that it is tereifa. And then it comes out, you did a malacha on Yom Tov without a purpose. Are we concerned about that? Are we loyal? Are we not concerned about that? Because most animals are not tereifas. Now, the key difference is, it actually explains that usually we also do a bedikah on an animal after it's shechted. But there it's more of a chumrah, because the fact is most animals are not tereifas. Here, mitzad adin, you have to check it, because after all, it fell off a roof or got stepped on or whatever. So now the question is, would you be allowed to shecht it on Yom Tov? Do we have reason to be concerned that it might actually turn out that it's treifa, and now you've shecht it on Yom Tov for nothing? Amar lei tanena. So Reb Zera answers, you can answer based on our Mishnah. We said, ein malabdinus and are often mitzvahs for him. We said, you're not allowed to heat up tiles white hot to roast on them. V'avinon v'maika ovid. We just asked in the Gemara, what's the problem with that? Why is that also on Yom Tov? Because we said we're talking about new tiles, because you have to check them and you have to see whether they're going to be able to take that kind of heating without cracking. So we see, in other words, that where there is something where you need to do bedikah, then yes, we do consider the possibility of a reyusa. There might be something wrong with these tiles where they weren't made properly in the first place, and therefore they're going to break when you fire them up intensely hot, and therefore we're saying you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. By the same token, with this bird, since you have to do bedikah, it's not just a chumrah, you actually have to do it in tzad adin, then it would come out that you can't do it on Yom Tov. Amalei, but Rabbi Yumiya says not necessarily. Because after all, we in all yeshiva, we learn rather the second version of what Rabbi Yochanan had said. The problem is not shetzarich levodkan. The problem is shetzarich lechasman. That when you're heating them up, that improves them. That makes them into a fully functional keli the first time you fire them up, and therefore that's also mitzad on the grounds of making a keli on Yom Tov. So in that case, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, then that has nothing to do with doing bedikah on an animal or a bird that fell off a roof or whatever. So therefore, maybe it should be mutter. Maybe we don't have a proof from there that machzikin and reyos be Yom Tov. In practice, actually, the Rishonim argue on the surface, all Gemara is saying then that you're allowed to. That you would be allowed to shecht this bird on Yom Tov and do bedik on it. On the other hand, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions other opinions of Rishonim. For example, the Ran talks about it. That no, they have a different girsa in the Gemara over here, and from their girsa it comes out that no, in fact, we're saying you can't where there needs to be bedikah. So that would mean in this case you wouldn't be allowed to shecht this bird. And more broadly, actually, it means we've talked about before when we've talked about an Amasechta shechting on Yom Tov, it brings in Shulchan Aruch that Lamaisa nowadays we're not noyig to shecht on Yom Tov because there's a certain number, there's a certain known number, not known, but whatever, there's a certain percentage of animals that do turn out to be trefa nowadays that were machmir in various kinds of trefas because of a lack of expertise. So therefore, there's a good chance, certainly not a majority or anything, but it's still, there's a definitely a miyut hamotzui, there's a certain known minority, let's say it could be 10%, it could be whatever percent, that are going to turn out to be trefa, and then it comes out that you did the malacha on Yom Tov unnecessarily. Therefore, at least when it comes to animals, you can't. Birds, it says you can be more makel on, because birds usually have very few trefas. So most of the trefas that we have to be machmer on nowadays involve the lungs, and a bird's lungs are much less susceptible to trefas. So that's one din that related back to this Mipnei Shetzarech L'Vodkon or L'Chosman, the question of whether you're allowed to shecht an animal that may have a reyus on Yom Tov. Another din that relates to that, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now this one question.
Why do you say that heating the tiles would make them a keli? They've been heated already.
No, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about then you're right. Actually, I should have explained. Rashi explains. We're talking about behesik rishon. We're talking about the first time you ever fire them up. That's what strengthens them. So, right, if you already previously used them before Yom Tov, you already heated them up and baked on them, then sure, you're allowed to again on Yom Tov. But when it's the first time, that's what we're talking about. That strengthens them. Yeah, they were fired in an oven before, but maybe they were fired at a low temperature or whatever, I don't know. But whatever the case, firing them the first time, white hot, as we said in the Mishnah Malabnim, is what is, according to one way of looking at it, is what makes them into a functional keli.
Well, that's obvious. Well, but the Mishnah doesn't have to say that.
Not so obvious. That's why we had a machloikas. Is it Shetzarech L'Vodkon or is it Shetzarech L'Chasman? If we said that it's Shetzarech L'Vodkon, then we're not even looking yet whether the Chasman. We're looking whether they're able to even withstand that heat without cracking, and it may turn out, therefore, that you're doing malacha for no reason. So the point would be, if Shetzarech L'Chasman, even though it's Shetzarech Yom Tov, and therefore it should be mutter, but because it involves making a keli, then therefore it would be aser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so going on, the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, this Braisa that we're going to learn has to do with Hilchas Shabbos. So even though the subject of our Masechta is Yom Tov, but here we're talking about Shabbos, as we're going to see, because it's going to relate back to this matter of heating up the tiles. The Braisa says, Echad maybe a Sa'ur, if you have one person brought fire, brought a flame or something to start a fire with, the echad maybe as a eitzim. Then another person came and brought wood and put it on that fire. The echad shofes as a kdera. A third person put a pot empty on the top of the fire. The echad maybe as a mayim. And a fourth person brought water and poured it into the pot. The echad nosim the seicha tavlin. And a fifth person put spices in there. The echad magus. And a sixth person stirred the contents of the pot to make it cook better. Kulan chayavin. All of them are chayav chatas for malachas on Shabbos. So Rashi explains that each one of them has done, different ones have done different malachas. The one who brought the fire, in other words, he brought a coal and then fanned on it in order to make fire come out of it. So he did the malacha of mavir. In fact, Rashi says, even it's not even that he blew on it, just carrying the coal from one place to another, automatically when you're carrying something along, that makes a breeze as you're carrying, as we always know on Yom Tov, when you're carrying a Yotzet candle from one place to another, you have to walk it very slowly. So here, Bapashtas, we're talking about he's walking at a normal speed. So that creates a breeze, which fans the coal. So he's chayav for that. The one who brought the wood is also mavir, because he's adding wood to a fire. Putting on the pot, the Gemara is going to ask, what's the problem with that? We're going to get back to that in a minute. Putting in the water and the spices and stirring are all part of the malacha of mevashel, that he's cooking. The Rambam understands it differently. The Rambam says all of them are involved with the malacha of mevashel, of cooking. Anyway, so v'hatanya achren chayev cholim turin. What do you mean that all of them are chayev chatas? We have another braisa that says only the last one is chayev chatas, and the other ones are all potter because all the other ones only did something that's also did a banan. The answer is like kasha. Hada icy ume ikra. It depends. When was the fire brought? The first braisa that says all of them are chayev is the fire with the first thing there. So the second person puts wood, he's putting wood into a fire that's already there, therefore he's doing the malacha of mavir. The third person is putting on the pot, and as we're going to say in a second, the pot is improved by the fire, etc. As opposed to the other way around, if you had one person brought wood and another person brought a pot and another person brought water and then spices and somebody stirred, no malacha has been done yet, there's no cooking yet. Only when somebody brings the fire, only then does the malacha start happening, so therefore he's going to be the one who's chayav chatas. So now the question, the Rambam phrases it a little differently. The Rambam says only the last two are chayav in that case, because he's saying that also the one who stirs, the fact is it's on the fire already, so he's stirring it, so therefore he's chayav chatas. So the question is, b'shlema kulu ka'abdi ma'isa. Fine. So in the first case, where somebody brought the fire, the glowing coal first, then fine. We understand why all of them are chayev, because each one of them, kulu ka'abdi ma'isa, we understand. Everybody is actually doing a ma'isa of cooking. Ela shreifas zakdeira ma'kavid. But even in that case, if a person puts an empty pot on a fire, what's the problem? What malacha is being accomplished by putting an empty pot on the fire? So the Rish Lakish says, because here we're talking about a new pot, so we're back to the thing of libun ra'afim. The same gzeder that the Chachamim said, don't heat up the tiles on Shabbos for the first time because we said levodkan or the chosman, you're trying to check out whether they're going to be able to take the heat, or you're strengthening them with that. The same thing would apply to this pot. And therefore, when you're putting it on the fire, you're accomplishing that. So therefore, it's going to be osur. So it comes out from the way Rashi is phrasing it. It sounds like from the way Rashi is phrasing it that we're not actually necessarily talking about an isur daraisa, because Rashi uses the expression it's a gzera, that the same gzera of libun ra'afim would apply to this. So therefore, when the Mishnah, when the Braisa rather said chayavin, wouldn't necessarily be that all of them are chayav daraisa. We mean most of them are chayav daraisa. That particular one did an isur derabanan. The Rambam, on the other hand, brings this Braisa as is, and he doesn't even bring the matter of it being davka, a new pot, neither does the Rif. So the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam talk about that he may understand that this, given that he's saying the whole thing is also because of Bavashal, he understands that even that any time, even you just put an empty pot on the fire, even if it's not new, then nevertheless you're accomplishing something as far as strengthening the pot, and therefore it's going to be a chiyuv, therefore it's going to be an isur daraisa. Tosfos mentions in this connection, so by that logic, you shouldn't be allowed to cook on Yom Tov for the first time in a pot. However, Tosfos says no, because here we're talking about an empty pot. When you're putting food in the pot, then that's different. Then it has nothing to do with Libun Ra'afim. On the other hand, the Rosh and other Rishonim disagree with that. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings, after that it brings, Machatchila, therefore you shouldn't cook in a new pot on Yom Tov. And for example, he gives an example, let's say you buy new pots before Pesach, then you should be sure to cook in them at least one time before Pesach, rather than cooking them for the first time on Yom Tov. But if you didn't, and now you're going to miss Simchas Yom Tov, if you don't cook in it, because you need to cook your food, then you can be Soymach on Tosfos Shitta and say that it's allowed, because you're cooking it with food rather than empty, like our Gemara is talking about.
Most of the pots today are made of steel. We're not talking about ceramics, but steel ones that have been hardened, you know, when they were made. So how can you say that you're making a keli even the first time?
So, but it's very possible that Tosfos and the Rosh are talking dafka about earthenware pots. You're right. It might be that with metal pots, not. On the other hand, not necessarily. I mean, metal also, the metal is a little bit different. We're actually going to mention something in connection with an earthenware oven, which is also a little bit different. It's not so much the heating it up, it's quenching it afterwards. With metal, what you do is you heat it up hot, then you quench it by putting it in cold water, and that's what strengthens it. So that might be the problem on Yom Tov. But again, if it's an old pot, then there's definitely less of an issue with that. And even if it's a new pot, again, if you have food in it, so l'chatchila, maybe you shouldn't. But the Di'evid was saying that Tosfos were that even in that case, even if the heating and then you're gonna so you're right. The heating itself might not be the issue; rather, the quenching it might be the issue.
After you use the pot, it's still hot and you put it in water? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that might be an issue on Yom Tov. Yeah. Okay. So what you do is you leave the pot to cool off, and then you rinse it. Yeah. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. We learn in another Braisa. Tanur v'kirayim chadashim, a new oven or a new stove, which haven't been used yet for cooking and baking. Hareim k'chol ha-kelim anitolim b'chotzer, they are like all other kelim that can be moved around the chotzer on Shabbos. Now, it's true you can't cook and bake in them, obviously, but you could put things inside them. You could use them as like a storage space or whatever. Therefore, and since they're a keli, therefore they're not yet considered a kli shemalach de l'isur. Once they've been used, then yeah, they're dirty inside. You're not going to want to put things inside them. But so when they're new, then you're allowed to. Avol ein sochin osim shemen, but you're not allowed to smear them with oil, which helps to polish them, because that helps make them nice and new, and it improves them as a keli. The ein toshin osim b'machlis, you also can't rub them with a cloth, same idea, in order to smooth them out. The ein mefigin osim b'tzonin kedei l'chasman, you also can't quench them with cold water in order to strengthen them. So with an oven, it's similar to the metal pots we were just talking about, where the main thing that's accomplished by the main way that you strengthen them is not so much by heating them up, but by quenching them in cold water afterwards. So therefore, so you're not allowed to so you're not allowed to do that after you fired them up. You fired them up before Shabbos. Then now on Shabbos, you want to pour cold water on it. You can't do that because, again, Masak and Mana. And the same thing would apply on Yom Tov as well, because you can't make a keli on Yom Tov either. Tosfos actually points out that there's a difference in this regard between tiles and an oven. Tiles, you bake on them directly. So therefore, all you need, so not so much you bake on them directly, but tiles, the process of hardening them involves only heating them up hot. And then afterward, and then that itself strengthens them. An oven is made a little bit differently, where there you actually, it's not the heating up so much, it's the cooling off with the cold water. And even then, Tosfos says it's not a vadai that it strengthens them so much. So therefore, so we're saying that, so therefore, the braisa continues, the imbishvil lefos hareza mutter. If you're quenching the oven in order to bake with it, in other words, we're talking about on Yom Tov. Let's say the oven has gotten overheated, and you're afraid that now if you put bread in it to bake, it's going to burn. Then mutter, then you would be allowed to cool off the oven. And here's where Tosfos says the reason you'd be allowed to, unlike with the tiles before, is because this cooling them off is not necessarily going to strengthen them. Unlike with the tiles, where heating them up is necessarily going to do that job of strengthening them and making them into a keli. Here with an oven, it doesn't work that way. So therefore, again, you're back to that you're allowed to do things that are from Malachas Oichel Nefesh, or even Machshirei Oichel Nefesh, where it's necessary to do it in order to have the food. And in this case, if the oven was overheated and you tried to bake in it, you'd end up burning the food. So therefore, you're allowed to. Now the Gemara brings in some more miscellaneous dinim of things you're allowed and not allowed to do on Yom Tov, where some of them have to do with baking. The Braisa says, Tana Rabbanan, Mogin as a rosh v'eser aglayim. You're allowed to do Mogin to the head and feet of an animal. Mogin is that you put them in hot, you pour hot water over them, or you dip them in hot water. The purpose of it is to help get the skin and the hair off more easily. By the way, you have issues of doing that before the meat was salted, because then you have the hot water is going to cause the blood to be absorbed in, and then you won't be able to kasher it. You won't be able to kasher the meat. So either we're talking about that this takes place after you did the melicha and hadacha and all that, or we're talking about it's not in such hot water. Whatever the case, you're allowed to do that. By the way, though, the Rishonim say the fact that we're mentioning Roish and Raglayim implies, and Tosfos mentions over here, you're not allowed to do it to the entire animal. For example, now you have, with a regular large animal, you wouldn't just do maliga anyway. You have to actually strip off the skin. But let's say you have a young goat. The skin of it is still fairly soft and edible. You could conceivably do maliga and be able to take off the hair and soften the skin that way, and then take off the skin that way. Nevertheless, Tosfos says you're not allowed to, because that would really be because that's much more of a tircha. It's much easier to strip off the skin in the usual way. Therefore, we're not going to be allowed to do it through maliga. But the head and the feet, which are only parts of it, or some of the Mephoshim say, those have anyway skin, which is much easier to strip off. So therefore, that you're allowed to. Similarly, instead of doing maliga, you could put that, you could hold them over a fire, singe off the hair, same idea. But you're not allowed to smear on the hair to get the hair off more easily. You're not allowed to smear on it chausis, which is ground up earthenware. So you take that, you grind it up or break it up and make it into a kind of into a loose kind of clay, which then it makes it easier after you smear it on the hair and it dries, you pull it off and the hair comes with it. You're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. V'lo ba'adama, or with raw or with raw mud or clay, v'lo b'sid, or with plaster. All of those, so Rashi explains, because all of those is the normal way that people do when they're tanning skins, so therefore you can't do that on Yom Tov. It would be uvdin d'chol, it would be doing things the way you normally do on a weekday. The Ra'ah adds also, there's a lot more tircha in that. So you're not allowed to do those. The ein gozes in osa the misparayim, you're also not allowed to cut off the hair from the skin using scissors, because then it looks like you're trying to do it because you want the hair. And when would you use the hair? You're not going to use it on Yom Tov itself. You'd be using it for after Yom Tov. And besides which, you have a malacha of gozes. That's not malachas oichel nefesh. So therefore, you can get the hair off using hot water or using a fryer, but not using any of these other methods. And also, the ein gozes, and it's a yerech b'tisporis shaloi. You're also not allowed to cut the rotten parts or whatever off vegetables using the special scissors that you use for that. So you have special scissors or shears that you use when you're picking the vegetables to begin with, when you're harvesting the vegetables in the first place. You use these scissors to do that. Now you can't use those same scissors to cut off the rotten parts of the leaves or whatever, because then it looks like you're actually harvesting the vegetables on Yom Tov. It's a matter of marasayin, and therefore you can't do that. However, on Yom Tov, you are allowed to prepare kundas and akavias to eat. Kundas and akavias, so the article explains these are various, so Rashi just says that these are various vegetables, that there's a big tircha in preparing them. But nevertheless, even though there's a tircha, it's melechas erchel nefesh, so you're allowed to. The article explains more specifically that they're bitter vegetables, that things that take a while to prepare. A different explanation is kundas or kinras is artichokes. Akavias is some other kind of vegetable or herb that has sharp points or sharp spines on it or whatever, similar to the way artichokes do. So the point is, you're allowed to, as Rashi is saying, to go through the tircha of preparing them on Yom Tov and cutting off the ends and cutting off, like you have with an artichoke, the sharp ends or whatever, because that's what you need in order to prepare them for food. Those, by the way, connect also with the kind of within Yonah D'Yoma. We just finished Parashas Bereishis when it says when Hashem tells Adam that the koitz v'dardar tatzmiach loch. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, and then the Targum explains, and not Targum, the Gemara explains in more detail that it means that Hashem is telling Adam that you're gonna that the ground is gonna grow for you. Not talking about Medrash actually. That the ground is gonna grow for you. Things like you're gonna have things like artichokes and these akavias and whatever, which have thorns on them and take a huge amount of preparation. But and that's what you're gonna have to eat. Anyway, so you're allowed to prepare those on Yom Tov. Again, we're not worried about the tircha because it is melechas erchel nefesh. You're also allowed to heat up and bake in a puni. A puni, the word puni is actually related to the word furnace in English. It means an oven like the kinds we have. Remember, the ovens they had at the times of the Gemara were shaped like a cone. So they had an opening on the bottom to put in the firewood and whatever. And then they had an opening on the top to put in, to stick the bread onto the sides or to put a pot in or whatever, and for the smoke to go out. The kind of ovens that we have now are made completely differently. They have a door that opens on the side. That kind of oven is described. That kind of oven is what the Gemara is called puni. Now, the point is, that kind of oven holds a lot more. The ovens that they had in those days were relatively small. A puni is able to be made much larger. So the point is, Rashi says, you're allowed to bake in a pruni on Yom Tov. Don't worry about that there's too much tircha, because what are we talking about? We're talking about you have a lot of guests, and you don't have any, you know, a tanur is not going to be enough to be able to bake all and cook all the food you need for them. Therefore, you're allowed to use a pruni. And also the point is, we're not worried that the floor of the pruni may break, because once it's been used a few times, then it's not likely to, just like our ovens are not likely to break just spontaneously like that. You're also allowed to heat up on Yom Tov hot water in an antichi. An antichi is a kind of samovar that they had in those days. It has a double bottom. The top of it, the top compartment of it, you fill with water. The bottom compartment between the two floors, you fill with coals, and you heat them up. And therefore, so now you have hot water, and because of the double bottom, it keeps the heat for a very long time, even after the coals have died out. So you're allowed to heat up hot water in that on Shabbos, on Yom Tov rather. And again, there's no problem of tircha, and there's no problem. Mefarshim say that it looks like you can make so much hot water in it, it looks like you're doing for after Yom Tov. No, you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov because you could use all that water, because you could end up using all that water on Yom Tov. The ain oven, the puni chadosh, shemati pachas. However, when it comes to a new puni, a new oven, like we said before, of the kinds that we have, then you're not allowed to bake in it on Yom Tov because the floor of it might fall in. So again, then it comes out that you did tircha shaloi l'tzorech, or the Rambam says, because then your bread is going to be ruined, and then you don't have simchas Yom Tov. And Tosfos says, we said before that you're allowed to fire up the oven and even to cool off the oven with hot water if it was overfired and bake in it. But the difference is a pruni, because it's larger, there's much more of a possibility that the first time you bake in it, the bottom of it might break. Therefore, you're not allowed to do that. Okay. More dinim about fire and other things on Yom Tov. Tanan Abanan. Ein neufchen b'mapuach. On Yom Tov, when you're trying to make the fire bigger, you're not allowed to blow on it with a bellows, because that's the kind of thing that professionals use. So Tosfos points out actually that it seems that any kind of bellows would be also even the kind that you just use at home. However, Tosfos says people are noyig heter with it by turning the bellows upside down. Tosfos doesn't really like that heter, but it is brought in. But it is brought in Shulchan Aruch as a possibility. But instead, you can do a shinui. You blow on the fire using a tube or a straw, which is not the normal way that an uman does it. The ein masaknin es hashvud. You can't fix a spit. We talked about the other day that you have a spit that was broken or bent or whatever, and you want to be able to use it on Yom Tov. So our Braisa is saying that you can't fix it on Yom Tov. Which Rashi says there are two possibilities. One is that this braisa is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because we learned before Rabbi Yehuda allows you to do machshira eichol nefesh on Yom Tov, where they're necessary to be able to eat on Yom Tov. And the other possibility, so one possibility is our braisa is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The other possibility is that the braisa is like Rabbi Yehuda, and we're talking about where it was broken before Yom Tov, and you could have fixed it before Yom Tov. But in Mechad, you also can't sharpen it for the same reason. Turn it up on, and then we learn another braisa. You're not allowed to break open a reed in order to roast a salted fish on it. So we learned the other day, you have, when you're putting a fish on the grill, the problem is the grill is going to get very hot in some places, it's going to end up burning the fish. So you put something underneath it. We talk about there putting a piece of earthenware or a piece of paper or something. We learned about that on Shabbos. So now, in a similar vein, the Braisa is saying, so we said over there, you can't break a piece of earthenware or cut a piece of paper for the purpose because you're making a keli. Similarly, over here, you can't cut open a reed to use the pieces of it to stick under the fish for the same reason you're making a keli. And then you're back to the problem of tikkun keli on Yom Tov. Avam of fatzin as eggers but matlis. But what you are allowed to do in connection with mafatzim, you're allowed to crack nuts inside a cloth. The in choshin shemati kora. We don't have to be concerned that the cloth is going to get ripped. You don't have to worry about that. Rashi says because actually, even if it does get ripped, there was no malacha over here because it's not kerei amanas litver. The actual malacha daraisa of ripping is where you're intending to sew it up, And here you don't have that. So therefore, so there's no malacha, there's no possible malacha daraisa here anyway. Therefore, you're allowed to, even if it does get ripped. Gilyan Ashas actually asks that anyway. Okay, but it's still also derabanan. So why didn't Rashi explain more straightforwardly? We hold like Reb Shimon, Dava Shein Meskaven is mutter. It's not a psik resha, then the cloth is not necessarily going to rip. So why didn't Rashi explain it that way? So during Ashas, Reb Akiva Eger leaves the question open. Achronim talk about possibilities. One of them is that, in fact, we are talking about where we do want the Gemara that we're saying over here to go even according to the Yehuda. So Rashi wants to explain the Mishnah even according to the Yehuda, who would say that Dava Shein Meskaven is Aser, but here, since it's only maximum and Isur Dirabanan, then Rabbi Yehuda is not going to be Gozer on that. And they talk about also, what if it is Psik Reisha? Again, you can discuss the question, is Psik Reisha Aser where the maximum that could be is an Isur Dirabanan? Rashi may hold that that's fine. We say Psik Reisha is Aser when you have a potential Isur Daraisa, but not like in this case where Rashi is stressing that it's anyway not a Malacha Daraisa, because not Amanas Litver. Maybe in that case, Psik Reisha would be fine. So in other words, even if you know for a fact that the cloth is going to rip while you're cracking the nuts. Okay. The Mishnah says, V'oid Omer Rabbi Eliezer. Furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer said. Now, what's this furthermore? So before, on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, we had a Mishnah that began with Rabbi Eliezer saying that you're allowed to take a chip of wood to pick your teeth, and you're allowed to collect any wood that you want from around the chotzer and use for firewood. The Chachamim, we said, disagreed on those points. So now, V'oid Omer Rabbi Eliezer. Furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer says another kula as far as the dinim of Muktzah. Rashi actually wonders, in that case, usually when you have a va'od like that, it should usually be as soon as possible after the first din. Here we have a whole bunch of unrelated dinim interrupting between them. So Rashi says, maybe in fact, there's a mistake over here. Maybe in fact, the Mishnayos are out of order. Maybe the proper order of the Mishnayos was supposed to be the beginning of the Mishnah, Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, Rabbi Eliezer Omer about the chip for the toothpick, and about using wood and about using firewood, and the Chachamim would say no. Then you would have on Mishnah about Va'od Amar Rabbi Eliezer, and then you would have the rest of the Mishnah over there about that you're not allowed to create fire on Yom Tov, and then you're not allowed to heat up the tiles. Tosfos says in that case the problem is not just the order of the Mishnayos. Then it comes out the order of the Gemara is also wrong, because the Gemara first discussed all those matters of making fire and of heating up the tiles, which was the whole sugya that we had just now. And only now is it going to be talking about Rabbi Eliezer's V'oid Amar Rabbi Eliezer. You're going to say that also the Gemara is out of order. So no, Tosfos says what it is it's true that there's a lot of things interrupting in between, but here, and you usually say you wouldn't do that, but that's where you have, for example, where one thing is a kula and the other is a chumra. Here, where Rabbi Eliezer wants you to know two kulas, one that he allows you to collect any kind of firewood from around the chotzer, and that he allows you to and then to take a toothpick, and also that he's going to tell us a din as far as the dinim of muktzah, then it's shayach to say va'oid even if there were other things in between. And the reason why, Taka, you have those other things in between is because Rabbi Eliezer was talking about getting firewood, so we finished talking about dinim involving fire on Yom Tov, and then we go back to other topics. So therefore, Tosfos says there's nothing out of order over here. So the Mishnah says, "V'oid Amar Rabbi Eliezer." Furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer says another kula. "Oimid Adam Ala Muktza." A person is allowed to stand before Yom Tov, over the Muktza. The Muktza is an area we've said before that it's an area where you have things stored. You have things put over there for storage. Now here we're talking about, let's say, you have fruit in there which you're drying. And Rashi explains, we had previously in the Gemara, in the previous perek, we had a case where the fruit is dry enough that you could eat it, the doichek, but not fully dry yet. It's called chozi v'loy chol, achzi v'loy achzi. It's suitable, but not, it's suitable. You could eat it in a pinch, but it's not fully suitable. So now, he has to do something in order to designate that he's going to eat it. Otherwise, it's going to be mukta. So Rabbi Eliezer says he's allowed to stand there by this mukta, by the storage area, by this drying area, erev Shabbos v'shvias, on an erev Shabbos during Shemitah year. When during Shemitah year, you don't have to worry about truma and meiser. So therefore, all you need is hazmana. the same thing would be. Rashi says, if it was during any of the other years, the same thing would be if he already took Maisa from them. The Mishnah doesn't mention that case because usually you don't take Maisa from them until Gmar Malacha, and here Gmar Malacha hasn't been accomplished yet because you're not finished drying. But yes, if he had taken Maisa from them, then the same din would apply on Erev Shabbos and other years. But Omer, and he can say, says Rabbi Eliezer, Mikanani Oichel Macher. I will eat from here. I'm going to take some fruit from here tomorrow and eat it. And that's fine because he holds Yesh Breira. So when it comes on Shabbos and you take certain fruit, then it means retroactively, those were the ones that he had in mind. Bacham say, no, he has to actually make a mark in Breira, they hold. So he has to actually make a mark and say, I'm going to eat from here until here, from this spot in the Muktzah, until this spot, and then those fruits are Mukhan and are designated before Shabbos, and he's allowed to take them on Shabbos and eat them. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that it's not really a matter of, it's not really a matter of Breira. It's more a matter of Muktzah. Rabbi Eliezer, now we learned in the first perek, we had Beis Shammai saying that when you want to select birds that you're going to eat on, that you're going to shecht and eat on Yom Tov, Beis Shammai says you have to actually pick them up. And Beis Sibyl said it would be enough if you stand there and designate them. Now, Rabbi Eliezer usually represents Beis Shammai, Rabbi Eliezer Shamusi. But so the Yerushalmi, in fact, wonders how come Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim seem to have opposite opinions over here compared to Beis Shammai and Beis Sibyl in perek Aleph. So Tosfos says, because mukta of animals is stronger, we're more machner in it. So that explains Rabbi Eliezer. So over there, Rabbi Eliezer and the rest of Beis Shammai are going to require you to pick up the birds, whereas over here, they're not going to require you to pick them up, to pick up the fruit. It's enough, Rabbi Eliezer says, to just verbally designate. What about the other way around? How do we reconcile Beis Hillel? Tosfos says, because the reason is, because over there, you didn't actually do anything to make the birds mukta. They themselves intrinsically are mukta unless you designate them because they fly in and out of the birdhouses. Here, you took this fruit and put it in the mukta to dry out. So therefore, the chachamim, representing the Hillel over here, are going to say you need something more than just a verbal designation. You need a verbal designation is enough, but you can't just say generically, I'm going to take from this area of fruit. You need to actually specify what particular area within the mukta you're going to take from. So, the Gemara is going to start off with it. It's going to start out, since we mentioned Erev Shabbos B'Shvi'is, when there's no Meiser involved. So now we're going to talk about how Meiser relates to all of this, how Meiser relates to the Dinim of Shabbos, and then we're going to relate it back to our Mishnah. Tnanha, so we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Meisers. Now, we have a rule like this. Normally, In order for fruit or produce or whatever to be chayev in trumas and maisers, you need gmar malacha, that the processing of it was completed, and whatever for each kind of crop you have its own kind of processing, and that it saw pnei habayis, it was brought into the front of the house, or at least the front of the chotzer. Up until that point, you're allowed to eat a snack from it. You're allowed to eat achilas ara. You're not allowed to eat achilas keva from it, even before those points, though, until you take maaser. So, tnan hosam, so we learn in a Mishnah in maasers, tinoikus chatomnu te'enim me'erev Shabbos, if children, or it doesn't just davka mean children, we'll explain in a second why the Mishnah mentions children, chatomnu te'enim me'erev Shabbos, they buried some figs before Shabbos, the shachu, and the point was they wanted to eat them on Shabbos, so they hid them or they buried them in the ground, intending that they're gonna get them out of the ground on Shabbos and eat them. The shachu, the issue, they forgot to take ma'aser from them beforehand. L'motzei Shabbos lo yoichlu aleim kein isru. And motzei Shabbos, they're not allowed to eat from those figs unless they take ma'aser. What happens is the fact that Shabbos came makes it now kvius. It makes it now that those fruit now are considered a kvius because eating on Shabbos is considered something choshu. So therefore, it's not considered achilas arai anymore. Therefore, now it would be considered achilas keva. So here, because they intended to eat it on Shabbos, then therefore it got a kvius. So even if they forgot and eat it and didn't end up eating them on Shabbos, nevertheless, they still already have that kvius. Why we mentioned davka children, Rashi and Tosfos both explain, the chiddush is, even though children, usually we say when we have something involving machshava, then we don't care what children do, because they don't have das yet, but here, where they're doing maisa hamechiyah, they're doing something that demonstrates that they're obviously planning to do such and such, then that has validity in halacha. So here, where they actually buried these figs, and you can see from what they're doing that they're planning to save them for Shabbos, then that's enough to make them chayev and maaser. So we see, in other words, that even though gemar malacha was not done yet, because the usual gemar malacha would be that gemar malacha was done already, Rashi says. If he had in mind that he was yet going to dry them, then that's different. It's not gemar malacha yet, but regular figs is already davash and nigmar malachta. So therefore, so we see from that Shabbos is one of the things that makes a kriyos even before it's brought, even though it's been brought into the house or into the chotzer. You actually have six or seven things that make things kivei, that are kivei things for maaser in that way. So now, utnanami, we have another mishnah in the same masechta that says, if a person is bringing figs through his chotzer where he intends to dry them, so now it's not nigmur malachta yet. So even though he brought them into his chotzer, it's not nigmur malachta because he intends to dry them. So his children and the members of his family are allowed to eat a snack from those figs, upturim, and they're potter from meiser. Because the chotzer is only kevei, if it was nigmar malachta, and here it wasn't nigmar malachta yet. Tosfos actually brings from Yerushalmi that he himself would actually be also to eat them, because the fact that he put them there showed that he plans to leave them over there. But they, since they didn't do that, then for them it's still considered arai. So we see from all that you need gemar malacha and afterwards be brought into the chotzer to be keveya. But we said on the other hand, Shabbos is keveya even without that. So now the question is, Bomine Ravamin of Nachman, Shabbos Mao Shitikma Muktzala Maiser, the Davashal Enigma Malachta. That's the question. The first Mishnah about the children, you have the figs already Enigma Malachta. So then we say for sure Shabbos can make them a kriyas, and now you need Maiser from them. What about the second kind of example where Loi Enigma Malachta? If you put out those figs to dry, and now let's say, so now they completely dried out, now Shabbos came, would you be able to eat from them or not? Would you be able to eat a snack from them? Do we say, since the Pasuk says that you should call Shabbos a delight, that means that eating on Shabbos has much more significance in halacha than eating on weekdays. Even a snack on Shabbos is considered a kavios. Therefore, cover. So therefore, it's kaveyav. And that would apply even if not nigma malachta. Or maybe not. Maybe even Shabbos is only keveya, only something we're already nigma malachta. So it would apply to those figs that the kids hid away, but it wouldn't apply to those figs that you put out to dry because there you don't have gemar malacha yet. So what is it? Amalei, so Nachman answers him, Shabbat. The answer is Shabbos kevas, bein medavash enigma malachta, bein medavash enigma malachta. Yes, Shabbos is keveya for either one. So in the case of these figs, even though not enigma malachta, nevertheless Shabbos comes, and on or after Shabbos, you can't eat from them unless you take truma and maaser. Amalei, so Rava asked him why. How do you know? Maybe say that the kviyos of Shabbos is like the kviyos of the chotzer. Ma chotzer ene kevas ela b'davash enigma malachtoi. When it comes to the chotzer, we said it only works by davash enigma malachtoi, and therefore we said the guy is bringing the figs into his chotzer to dry. They're not yet chayev and meiser because it's not enigma malachtoi. So why don't we say that the same thing as Shabbos? Af Shabbos like tikva ela b'davash enigma malachtoi. Why don't we say the same thing as far as Shabbos? Where are we getting from that it should apply even where lo enigma malachtoi? Amalei, so Rav Nachman answers him, Limud Orochub Yadenu. Limud is actually something that the censors changed. The censors, for whatever reason, decided they didn't like the word Talmud, so a lot of times they changed it to Limud or other words like that. Really, Rav Nachman is saying, Talmud Orochub Yadenu. There's a known halacha that we have in our hands that we learned from our Rabbeim. Shas Shabbos Kevas, Bein Medavash Enigma Malachte, Bein Medavash Enigma Malachte. So that's it. You're right. Logically, you could argue it doesn't seem to be so, but nevertheless, that's how it is. Shabbos is Keveya, no matter whether Enigma Malachte or not. So Oma Mazutra, Vedir of Nachman, Afa Nanami Tanena. As a matter of fact, we can show from our Mishnah that that's the case. Because we said, that we're talking about on an Erev Shabbos during Shemitah, when Trumas and Maisers are not relevant. implying, in other words, that if it was any time during the other 6 years, then you would have, you can't just say Omed Adam and say Mikanani Noita Lamacha, because as soon as Shabbos comes, then it's going to be Nikba. Time of the Shviyas, the La Bari Surihu. So the reason why it's Mutter, with only verbally designating in accordance to Rabbi Eliezer, or making a mark and saying from here till here according to the Chachamim, is the Shviyas, because it's during Shmita. The La Bari Surihu. It's not a year when you take Maaseh. Ha B'Shar Shnei Shavua HaChinami D'Aser. Implying that if it was during the other 6 years, it would be Aser. My timer. Now, why would it be also to do that the rest of the years? Lav mishum the Shabbos cover. Wouldn't it be because Shabbos is keveya? So what happens? We have this fruit in the mukta. Gmar malacha has not been completed yet because they're in the process of drying. As Rashi said on the Mishnah, they're almost dry. They're at a point where they are just barely edible, but not completely yet. That's why you need hachana for them. That's why you need to designate them. But the implication is that if it wasn't Shavuos, if it was some other year, there'd be another thing that would prevent you from eating them on Shabbos, namely that you haven't taken Maaser from them yet. Implying, even though there's no Gmar Malacha yet, nevertheless, as soon as Shabbos comes, you have a Kvius and you can't eat a snack of them anymore. So that would prove Reb Nachman's point. The answer is Loi, not necessarily. Shiny Hossam, it's different there in our Mishnah. The Kliyos is not necessarily because of Shabbos. The Kliyos is precisely because he says, I am going to eat from here tomorrow. In other words, that he's pre-designating, is calling it Achila. He's not calling it Achilas Are, he's calling it Mikanani Oichel Lamacher, implying that in his mind, he thinks about it as a real Achila, as a real eating. So that would be the reason, not necessarily as Shabbos itself, Keveya, but the fact that he used an expression of Achila. So the question is, Yehochi Ma'iri is Shabbos, then in that case, why does the Mishnah have to mention Shabbos? Afilu b'chil nami. The same din would apply if it was on weekdays. The same, in other words, why is this Mishnah in Masechta Beitza over here in Seder Moed? Rabbi Eliezer should be putting his din, according to that, Rabbi Eliezer should be putting his din in Masechta Maisris and Seder Zeroyim. And say, in other words, that once he says Mikanani Oichel Lamacher, then that makes, or even Hayom, then that makes it a Kvius. Instead, we have it here in connection with the Dinim of Yom Tov, and to a certain extent of Shabbos, which shows, therefore, that it has nothing to do with the regular Dinim of with the regular dinim of Achilas Arai versus Achilas Keva. It's something that is triggered by Shabbos or by Yom Tov, and there you see, like Reb Nachman says, that it is that Shabbos is Keveya. The answer is not necessarily Hakamash Malon, because what the Mishnah may want to imply by putting it in connection with Shabbos, the Tevel Muchan Huetzo Shabbos, that you shouldn't think that fruit that's Tevel is completely off limits for Shabbos, because after all, it's Mukta, because you can't do anything with it. Really, what it is it is considered Muchan as far as Shabbos. It's not considered completely Mukta in the sense Shim Ova B'Tikna M'Sukkan. If now we know you're not allowed to take Truma and Maaser on Yom Tov, we're going to learn that on Shabbos. We're going to learn that in the next Perek. But B'di'eved, if somebody did do that, we do say that Truma and Maaser takes effect. Since D'Oraisa it's Mutter, you can't call this fruit Mukta Machmas Isser. So therefore, so the Mishnah is saying, in other words, the Mishnah is implying as follows. The person can stand there Erev of Shabbos B'Shvias and do this. On the other hand, during the rest of the years, when Trumas and Maaseris apply, he shouldn't do that. Not because the problem is as soon as Shabbos comes, there's going to be a Kvius, but because because he is Keveya with his Dibur, he is, by saying Mikanani Oichel, he's making a Kvius. Now the problem is it would need Truma and Maaser. You're not supposed to do that on Shabbos. Therefore, the Mishnah is not mentioning that he can do this during the rest of the years, because the only way to do it now would be if he's over on this Takon, on this Gzeira Dirabanan, and takes Truma and Maaser on Yom Tov. But nevertheless, the Mishnah still could be implying that if he did that, then it would be Masukkah, and it would be the fruit now becomes Chulin, and now he would be allowed to take from it on Shabbos, and we don't consider that it's still Mukta. In other words, Tosfos explains if the Tana had held that it's osi because of mukta, and that if he held that you that even b'diavad, if he took truma and meiser on Yom Tov would remain osi, then the Mishnah should have phrased it that he stands there erev Shabbos b'shvias and says mikanan in Yom Tov l'mocha harehu min hamuchan, then it would be considered prepared, and the implication would be the rest of the time it's not prepared, it would be mukta. The fact that he doesn't say that, he just says mikanan in Yom Tov l'mocha, implies that b'diavad, if he did that during the other years, then it would it's not considered mukta. The fruit in there is never considered mukta. During Shemitah, it's obviously not because there's no Trumas and Meiser to be taken. And during the rest of the years, because B'dievet, if he did take Truma and Meiser on Shabbos, then that would take away the Issur. Okay, so we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll close out the parak tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more discussion about these dinim of Trumas and Meiser.
Yes, Shekayat. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah.